You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Amy Puryear. Is that pronounced properly?
It's actually Puryear. Puryear. So as if the Y was silent.
As if the Y. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
And we didn't get a chance to do that before. And I knew you by an earlier name.
Mm-hmm. Which was even trickier. Well. So I don't mind this.
Puryear.
Yes, perfect.
Okay. So Amy, the way we start the show is with the big question that gets us started as who are you? What do we need to know about you? Qualities, labels, mm-hmm. Directions. What do we need to know about you to start this conversation?
Okay. Well, I guess I'm going to start by telling you that I live in Perry City, which is not a city at all.
Right.
It's a little crossroads town, part of Trumansburg. And I feel like where I live is so much of who I am. I've been out on our land and in our home for almost 20 years. And so I've done a lot of growing there since my early 20s. And it's 5 acres of land, and Tagannett Creek runs along the back side of the property. And we have a huge garden that is a big part of my life. Wow. And we live in a barn that we've renovated. And it's just, the land is part of who I've become.
And
so that's one. That's the first
one piece.
Thing.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a mom, and so I have a beautiful 8-year-old boy who loves to ride horses and dance and sing, and he's learning to play the guitar. And he is my pride and joy, of course.
Sure.
And I'm married, and my husband Ward and I play music together in our band called Lila Bell. So that's another huge part of my life. I would say that there's probably 4 biggest parts of my life, and that would be my garden and my home land, my family, so right. my child, and my band, Lila Bell,
right, right.
And then my teaching. And so I teach music to kids, and I'm actually working at Laura Reed's school, who you know, at
yes.
the Trumansburg Montessori School. And I just love it and feel very, very honored to be part of such an amazing program and with such an amazing teacher as Laura.
Oh, yes, 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 mm-hmm. yes. Those are lots of wonderful images and experiences to have working around our heads as we and our hearts as we start this conversation. You also brought some music.
Mm-hmm,
now, what are we going to start with? Do you want to introduce that?
Yeah. So I brought some music that I've made over the past, I'd say about almost 20 years since I moved out to my land. And the first song is from my first CD that I recorded, which is called Mosaic, Songs of Many Traditions. And that CD came about just a few years after I graduated from college, which I was a singing a vocal major, mm-hmm. music ed at Ithaca College. And I studied mostly classical music, but towards the end of my studies there, I learned about more world music and chants, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and kind of just barely scratched the surface with that in school. And then once I got out of school, I dove more into that kind of stuff. And so this first song is one of the 14 songs on the CD. Each song is from a different country and in a different language.
Wow.
And so this song is called Wene Yoho, and it's an Iroquois women's chant.
Wene yoho, wene yo, hai ne yo, wene ho, hawi hawi ne ya.
Okay.
Wene yoho, wene yo, hai ne yo, yo wene, hawi hawi ne ga, na wea heya. Wene yoho, wene yo, hai ne yo, wene ho, hawi hawi ne heya. Wene yoho, wene yo, hai ne yo, yo wene, hawi hawi ne ga, na wea heya. Yoho wene yo, 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 hai ne yo, yo wene, hawi hawi ne ga, na wea heya. Wene yoho wene yo, hai ne yo we ho, hawi hawi ne heya. Wene yoho wene yo,
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Amy Pereer. So Amy, where I like to go to next, if this is a good spot, a good place, is what are some of the experiences or that you've had that have helped to kind of shape the life that you now live and value? And how did you come by those experiences, and what have you learned from them?
Okay. Well, maybe I'll start with music.
Sure. We'll be doing the reverse order of how you introduced yourself. No, I'm teasing.
I can't keep track of it all. So music, I always knew as a youngin' that I loved to sing. And I actually have a twin sister, and we both always sang together growing up. We both also went to Ithaca College for music, and she was a performance major, and I was a education major, but we both sang our way through school. And she kind of stayed on the classical track for a long time after school ended. And like I said, I discovered some other styles of music that felt more like me and more like my voice, and that I could sing in a way that felt more true.
Uh-huh.
And so learning the first music that felt really true to me after college was the music of Hildegard von Bingen and medieval Latin chants.
Oh, yes.
And so I dove into that and explored that, and I felt like my voice rang more true with that than it did with classical and more technical type stuff.
And it's a cappella, and it's just in that solo voice where you really just let it.
Yeah,
it just floats. Sing.
Yeah, and I actually also would sometimes sing with a drone underneath me with something called a shruti box or a harmonium, which are both drone instruments from India.
Huh.
And so that was kind of a freeing experience for me after having studied music so technically.
Right.
And then from there, a couple years after college, I met the Trumansburg community. And that's where I still am.
That sounds like, you know, what happened? There has to be a story behind that.
Well, really, I actually met Trevor McDonald first, and he was hanging up a poster for a Donna the Buffalo show. And that is, like, to me now thinking back on it, it was major foreshadowing of what would come in my life.
Right. Right.
And so I was working at Moosewood, and he was hanging up a poster on that back hallway there where they used to hang posters. And we started talking about shows and music. And so he invited me to come see this band, Donna the Buffalo. And when I went to the show a few weeks later, I found that I was just as taken with the music that I was hearing as I was with the crowd that was there dancing to it. And seeing just this community of people loving the music together and sharing and dance and song, and of all ages. When I was in college, you know, it's like 18 to 22, like that's the range. And so it really, I feel like I saw into this community that instantly I wanted to be part of.
Right.
And I'm very much a part of it now. Jeb Pereer is my brother-in-law, and I'm just part of this family of musicians now out in Trumansburg and Perry City. It seems like everyone I know pretty much plays music of one sort or another. And
that is the Trumansburg that you were introduced to.
Yes.
In a big way.
Yes. And I'm very thankful for that.
That's neat. That's neat. How given, I don't know where you came from, but given where you came from, did this surprise you, or was this just a trajectory you were on that just fulfilled itself? Or?
It very much surprised me. I came from Massachusetts, from a small town southwest of Boston, but not connected to Boston at all.
Mm-hmm. About halfway 40, between Rhode Island and Boston.
Mm-hmm, yeah, about 45 minutes from Boston, and just a very small town with one stoplight. There was a McDonald's, there was a convenience store and a grocery store, and everyone knew everyone. And I had a lot of friends, and I grew up with a wonderful family, but besides that, there was really nothing going on. You know, there was one school, and it was small, and we had talent shows in school, right, and concerts and stuff, but there was no music outside of that. There were no farmers markets. There were no festivals. You know, the scene, we didn't have a lake. Like what we have here, I feel like I see my child growing up in this community, and I just feel like he has so many riches with the community and the environment. And so my biggest, surprise was, after I had gone to see that one Dawn of the Buffalo show and kind of got into this community a little bit and exploring that, the following summer I went to my first festival, and I didn't sleep for 3 days, not even for an hour. I just partied and danced, and by the end of it, I remember just laying there near my tent, and I said to a friend of mine, "I found my people," and I really felt like that, like I had just found this place to just celebrate community and music and dance, and it was great. And cool. I haven't looked back.
No. In fact, you've carried on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, how has your music changed because you found a place?
Mm-hmm. So at that point, I was still singing a lot of world music and chants, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I did, for many years, sing those songs at these festivals, and I felt very honored to have that opportunity because it wasn't always exactly in line with what else was happening musically at the festivals,
right.
and I felt like I was taken in for what I was doing and was given a chance to share that.
Right. And you're in an awkward role as an interpreter because you're interpreting other people's music. And,
mm-hmm,
and,
right.
and in this place, exactly. that can be loaded because there are people for whom that is their music,
mm-hmm.
and you're both honoring it, but you're also appropriating it.
Right. I do feel like any time that someone from a different culture, say from a Native American, mm-hmm. or people from India, people from Ireland, people that had heard my songs from different cultures, mm-hmm. were always very appreciative that I was singing in their language. And I think I must have I had a knack, or still do probably, for language. So, for example, my next record that I made in Guatemala, and all the songs are sung in Spanish.
Yeah.
And I can speak Spanish fairly well, but the way I sing it, I feel like it sounds as if I was fluent.
Yes, I would say that, you know? Having listened to that album.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And so people there also just were so appreciative that I loved their music and that I chose to express it with my own voice.
Yeah. And I'm going to frame it. You took the time to be good at it. You know, and when mm-hmm. I was an exchange student in Latin America for my last 6 months of high school,
uh-huh.
I grew up on a subsistence farm. I didn't know how to eat properly at a table. This was an upper class family.
Uh-huh.
They had a lot of very life skill things to teach me, but I could sing. And so, and they would teach me things to sing, and I then sang at Catholic Mass one day as an invitation, just because that was their way of honoring me and letting me try to honor them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, it can be a,
that gives me chills.
Affirming. Yeah.
I sang at a lot of Catholic masses, mm-hmm. in Guatemala as well. And, you know, that's their festival. That's their community and their party. And so it was a beautiful thing to be part of this, this community that I always went back to, and to learn their songs and to sing them with such strength and power and joy with these children that, you know, the children that sing, the way they sing in Guatemala is different than what I've heard anywhere else. And it's just with all their heart and all their strength.
Full chest, full throat.
Oh yeah. It's amazing.
It's a full contact sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I felt honored to have been invited into their community and into their music, and mm-hmm. to be able to share it with them.
Yeah. And So where has your music taken you since then?
So since then, and I guess through that time, like through making the first CD, Mosaic, and singing the world music, and then traveling to Guatemala, I went there every winter pretty much for 7 or 8 years and spent several months on end working there and volunteering in the music classes. But through that time and then making that second record down there, I also, when I was home, I was living out in Trumansburg in Perry City and living in this barn, and we had no running water and no electricity, and we had a hand pump for the water and candles for light and an outhouse, and it was a certain style of living that I'd never even really known people did anymore, and I loved it. And we started a garden back then, and that's when I learned how to garden. And so I feel like all those years and continuing on into now, even though we are on the grid at this point, I became a country girl. Right. And so being a country girl, I started singing country music.
That's
where I'm leading to.
And before we leave Latin America, let's go back and play your second song, which is from Liberacion.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to introduce it?
It's called Espíritu de Dios, Spirit of God. And this, amongst many of the other songs on the record, is a song that I learned there from the children and from their music teacher, Juan Cos Asuncion. And I just got the honor of being able to sing it with them.
Espíritu de Dios, llena mi vida, llena mi alma con tu poder. Espíritu de Dios,
listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Amy Pereer. So, Amy, continue. with the story of your musical evolution and, okay. And how that how your life tracks with that.
Okay. So I was singing songs that lots of other people had written from lots of different countries and lots of different times in history even. And I did start dabbling a little bit in music from around here, more traditional music and local people's music. But I always felt like I was missing something. And as I started singing more kind of country style and folk music, I felt it more and more. Like I wished that I could be writing some songs. But they just weren't, I don't even know if I tried that hard, but I just felt like I wasn't really a songwriter and nothing had come to me. And so, you know, I was singing, I was learning some Patsy Cline and Loretta Lynn and Emmylou Harris. And I loved Jenny Stearns and Richie Stearns and people from Trumansburg area. And so it was a great time to be able to learn other people's music and like see how that kind of music felt. But I did always just feel like I wished that I could create my own and bring something of mine to the table, and almost felt like I wasn't as true of a singer as I would be if I was also a writer. Which isn't necessarily true, but that's how I felt at the time.
No. And how has that changed?
Well, I started writing music.
Okay, and so what was the people begin to write or sing their own when they have something to say, and when they have something they really have to say. I mean, yeah. I grew up in a setting that we actually sang conversation to each other while we worked. It's a very old-fashioned kind of early 19th century kind of phenomenon among certain rural whites, and it has an analog in black singing, but it's not a rote song. It's you sing what you're thinking about, and you make up the melody and the lyrics all at the same time because it's conversation in music. And when you have something to say, it all comes together nicely. But when you don't, you fumble either for words or for melodies or whatever.
Right.
What helped you turn the corner to discover that you had something to say that you needed to say?
Well, I think that one thing that helped me turn the corner was letting go of wondering what other people would think about what I was saying.
Okay.
So when I'm songwriting, when I'm writing, I have to just like put that piece of my brain aside that says, well, is this cheesy or is it going to resonate with people or what would this person think?
Just do it.
Yeah, just do it. And, you know, everyone has a first song, and first songs, they might be great or they might not be great. And that's okay to just allow yourself to go there. Once you have a first song, then you can have a second song. But you're never going to get to your 20th song unless you start with your first song. And so my first song, my first full song that I wrote was actually, it was called Ring the Bell Tower. And it was a song of... I guess, peaceful protest. And so it was at a time when a lot of, I guess there was always crazy stuff going on in the world, but, but it was my way of expressing, my peace and my hope for the world at a time when there was scary stuff going on.
Yeah.
And so I wrote it, and then I suppose I probably sang it for some people and they liked it. And so that's very reaffirming.
Gratifying. Yeah. And so validating. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I kind of knew it was good, but I didn't, you don't, you know, you still have those certain doubts or fears or whatever. And so it's a very vulnerable space that you're in when you first share a song with people that you've just written from your heart.
Right.
And for me, writing the melody, I could write 30 songs a day if all I had to do was write melody. It just comes to me without any problem at all, I have found. The words are what I really have to work at. And sometimes the words come to me quickly, and sometimes I might be working on a song for a few months and have to put it down and come back to it. And so it really depends on the song. But when I did start writing songs, I felt like, I don't know, I felt like I could just keep going on this path and being truly even more who I really am, which is, I guess I've become this country girl that likes to sing and work in the garden and have amazing community. And
and it seems like it is just a very satisfying and joyful place to be. when you were talking just early for a moment there, that you knew it was good, and that's not a statement of conceit. It can be heard mm-hmm. that sort of when mm-hmm. we talk about things that we do are good. You're talking about being a songwriter, and that's a craft. Mm-hmm. And like if I build a chair and table for my daughter like I did 18 years ago, or actually 25 years ago, sorry.
time flies.
If I could do math. it's good because you know the craft. And there's a point where you really do are tender in that knowing. Mm-hmm. And the feedback of other people is something that you respond to. But there is, and you will always respond to it. But there is a time when you know that the craft is good, whether people like it or not.
Right. And I think part of it also is knowing it's good is knowing that it's true. Like, it's not just something that I made up because I thought it might be good. Or, you know,
right.
It's like...
And that's really where I want to go with this. Mm-hmm. So what makes the song true? Melody and words. What makes it true?
I think it makes it true when I don't let doubts get in the way. And when I almost feel like a song is like a baby being born every time. Like uh-huh. there's something that wants to come through, that wants to come into the world and be born. And if I can be like a vessel, mm-hmm. you know, and I add to it, of course, because it's me and it's my song and my experiences or experiences that I think about as I'm writing, but it really, I feel like if I can allow it in whatever realm to come through me and without, it's hard to express, I guess, well, but.
I'm gonna give simple words that I've used in the past, but it's been a while since we've used them on the show. Something is true for me, and truth isn't about facticity. It's true when it's intellectually accurate, emotionally honest, and physically compelling to the senses. Mm-hmm. And singing engages all three of those ways of knowing, and birthing is the same mm-hmm. kind of image. You need to know what you're doing, or know well enough what you're doing intellectually. It has to have an emotional center of gravity that feels true, and that when you sing it, you whether it's light or funny or deep or playful or whatever, it has those qualities, and you don't push them.
Right. And that when you sing it, that you're really feeling you're feeling those qualities, yeah. or you're feeling what the words are evoking, or what the melodies are. You know, if the melodies and the words and your own spirit and heart are all kind of in right. line with each other.
And you can perform it. And I heard an interview, and I don't remember who it was. He said, I know that the song is right if I feel like I can perform it 1,000 times and not completely be done with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if it has a life of its own, I suppose. It has wings and, you know.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like a great song is a song that can touch other people, not just yourself as the songwriter, mm-hmm. but is a song that can be heard by different people and maybe taken in, of course, many different ways, depending on where those other people are at and what the song might mean to them. But to have it affect people and help them, or, you know, I think that's a great song as well.
Right. Where do you, there's a sense in which you are searching for material, or you're living your life with an openness to what comes to you, which is the opposite way of saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. How do you seek or find the motivation to write your music?
I think it comes to me in so many different ways uh-huh. at different times. Like there have been a couple years of a stretch when I haven't written at all. Mm-hmm. But I was still playing my music and playing in a band, but just I didn't have the time or space, I suppose, to write. And other times when, like last winter, I wrote 4 songs in a month. And to me, that was just, I was so excited because that's such a gift.
Right.
And like I said, I don't feel like it's just me sitting there writing the song, even though it is. It's just, I'm the only one there and I'm doing it. But I feel like
but
is a gift that...
you're connected to all sorts of mm-hmm, things.
Yeah. So I would say for sure, for me to be able to write, I need to have a certain type of, time and space. Mm-hmm. And so I live in this barn, and it's a one room, it's basically a glorified one room shack. There's no walls except the outside walls. And now that we have a bathroom inside, there's walls for the bathroom. But besides that, it's just one big open space with a upstairs and a downstairs. And so I don't always have, like, I can't just go into the den or a different room and close the door and have space. So, and I have a child, so, you know.
An 8-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard to always find that kind of space, but.
What is the space? What is the space that you need?
I'd need to be.
How is it yours?
I need to be alone. Mm-hmm. So that I don't feel self-conscious, I suppose. Like, it's like I want to be able to go through different. Melodies or words or chord changes, whatever it is, I want to be able to do it and know that no one else is hearing me, or just that it's just me. Mm-hmm, it's just coming from me. I also need to just have just the kind of headspace where I'm not all, I guess, cluttered with different responsibilities or stresses or other stuff going on, but just to have an open space. And, you know, of course, if I've been immersed in a lot of music recently, or even just intense things like heartbreak type things or joyful things, anything that's intense and passionate, I tend to write better, because like you said, then you have something to write about.
Right.
Instead of just, there have been times that I've wanted to write and I might just be sitting there like, all right, well, what am I going to write about? And try to conjure something up, but nothing's really going on specifically at that time in my world to inspire me. So nothing really comes. But if I have inspiration, whether it be heartbreak or love or joy, then it's, things tend to show up for me. Mm-hmm.
So how would you write? And this, I'm just curious, because you are a very positive and energetic person. How would you write about boredom?
About boredom,
or about kind of the sorrow that is listless.
I think that it would probably be more descriptive of boring things. Like, I mean, I feel like there's actually some great songs that are just very simple and not really talking about anything so intense after all, but just, you know, like walking down the street or just like everyday things. And I think some of those songs are the best songs. I don't think that a song has to only be about intense, passionate things.
But it's easy to start your motor.
Right.
When you've got that energy going.
But then to bring it back to the everyday or to more boring or just not as intense things, I feel like songs can, I feel like that type of song actually people can relate to really well if it's just kind of like everyday stuff that you're talking about.
And like it's almost like you're singing your life as it comes, as it plays. Let's go to one of your other songs.
Okay.
This is from your Lila Bell group. And it's Stirring Honey In.
Yes.
What do you want to say anything about before we play it or after?
I'll just say this is one of my earlier songs as well. And it's really about when you think things might be going one way and you might be trying to head in a certain direction, that life or love or whoever might come in and just stir a little honey in and a little sugar in and just show you the sweetness in another direction, and then you get led in that direction. And that's okay.
Okay, here we go.
I got the wind in my sails, but it just died down. Gotta figure out how to make it blow. I've been moving all around, far from this crossroad town, but it just died down. I got the sun on my back, but it just sunk up. Now the cold night is tearing through my soul. Searching for something sweet, but it just sucks.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Amy Pereer. So, Amy, that was the first cut off a CD by Lila Bell.
Yes.
And so what is with the name, and what is this new incarnation of your musical life?
Well, Lila Bell is my baby in a certain way. So I do have a child I spoke of. His name is Willoughby. That's my son. But when I was pregnant, I didn't know if I was going to have a boy or a girl. And if I had a girl, it was going to be Lila Bell.
I see.
Lila Bell Pereer. And, of course, I was just overjoyed when I first met Willoughby. And I remember also seeing the spirit of this little girl, Lila Bell, just rise up. And I kind of just waved goodbye to Lila.
Uh-huh.
You know, pregnancy is long. And so for that time, I really feel like I got to know this other being who was Lila Bell. Like, mm-hmm. It really became another being for me. So anyway.
As you were anticipating the birth, I assume you chose not to know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So then years later, a couple of winters ago, we were making this record in Nashville with my band, and we had been called the Double E, and we just weren't totally feeling that name, and knew that if we were ever going to change it, that we had to change it before we made this record and put the record out. And so we spent months just trying to figure out what a cool name would be, and we went through so many names, and no one could really agree fully on any of them. And then at one point in the studio, we were about halfway done with the record, and I mentioned the name Lila Bell, and I said, you know, it wouldn't be that my name would be changed to Lila Bell, but that the band name itself would be just Lila Bell, mm-hmm. and everybody loved it. And then I did explain to the band that, with tears in my eyes, that it was just so perfect because to me, my band and our music and us doing this and following this path is my other baby. I mean, yeah. So,
wow.
So yeah, it's my other baby.
And you and your band, is your partner part of your band?
Or, yeah. Yeah. Ward Perrier writes half the songs and I write the other half. And he plays the electric guitar in the band. And he's the one that kind of like brought me into country music in the first place. And and to this country lifestyle. So
right. It is a bond.
It is.
Yes. Let us play one more song from the album,
okay.
and then we'll talk a little bit about how you keep yourself balanced.
Sounds
good.
What
you do to try to keep your life balanced. So the next song is "Time on My Hands."
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say anything about that?
I will say one of my favorite parts of the song is the guitar playing that Jason Shago, our other guitar player in the band, he is highlighted in this song, and he's just great. I love him. A band is really, it's really a family and a relationship amongst five people, and I feel so solid right now about our relationship
And they're all, are they all local? But when you go to Nashville, you go as a group?
They're all local. When we went to Nashville, we brought myself, Ward on guitar, Jason on guitar and lap steel, and then Dana Billings joined us on drums.
Oh, yeah, I know Dana.
We love him so much. Yeah. He doesn't play drums with us anymore, but at that time he was playing with us, and then our bass player was our friend in Nashville who had the studio, Bill Reynolds.
Okay.
But now we have a full band that's local up here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there we go.
All right.
Slow and slow came ahead. hold it delicately. It's a choice that we're all given, a place for love to live in. Could lose, it's just what you gotta choose. 'Cause
listening to WRFI Watkins Glen Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Amy Puryear. A line in that song, faith can't be held for free, you have to hold it delicately. Faith, the historic meaning of faith was trust and hope, and trust is something which is given, not earned, and hope is a stance, not a calculation. And it's a very delicate way to kind of manage those things, because we live in a world that's more calculating than that, and yet we want to be able to have these relationships. But this is part of what struck me was that those are words that are really important to me in my own work, but they're also words that an attitude about life. How do you hold it delicately? How do you keep your own kind of sense of hope and trust, your sense of who you are, which I'm going to infer is a big part of what you want to project to the world. How do you take care of that? How do you restore yourself? How do you try to maintain it physically, emotionally, intellectually, on a regular basis, daily, throughout the day, weekly, monthly? What do you do to take care of yourself?
I think that what I do that's some of the most important things are remember what brings me joy. And so that is playing music, that is having fun, peaceful, joyful times with my son, that is teaching music to children, that is definitely gardening. I find, you know, if I wasn't a singer, I would be a farmer. My husband and I actually dabbled in that. A bunch of years back, we became garlic farmers, and we were very successful with our crop, but realized that you can't really be both. You can't be a musician and a farmer if you want to be good at either one, because they are so full on and full time. And ironically, our garlic crop, our garlic is called music, and we admitted to each other that we'd rather play music than grow music. So we still do grow a small bit in our garden, which our garden is huge, but it's a garden. And so I find so much joy in learning about, in just getting my hands in the dirt. And a lot of my songs talk about like being in the dirt and like doing work like that. So those are all things that kind of bring me back to me. And I don't go to church, or I have in my past done like some yoga and a little bit of meditation and ceremonial stuff. But I don't find that I'm doing that so much these days. But when I am in my garden and the creek is running by and the sun is shining, or if the rain is coming down, I feel like I'm at my best.
Right. And you use the expression, these bring me back to me. When are you not me? What is it like inside of yourself to not be you?
Maybe if I'm having struggles with my husband, or with, if I'm just really busy, I suppose, with, things that aren't giving me enough time to to play music or to be in the garden or to remember the things that bring me, that kind of just connect me to that element. When I don't have time to just to do the things that bring me joy, I suppose that I'm still me, but I'm the me that isn't as connected or doing what I feel like I'm meant to do, I suppose. Right. But honestly, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I'm always me.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out, because that was an interesting expression.
Yeah.
And what I was also thinking is, for some people, when they don't feel like themselves, they feel scattered.
Uh-huh.
And that feeling of scattered means that you're just not connected, you're not centered, you're not necessarily out of control, but you're just not together.
Yeah.
And then the other people feel like out of control or negative or judgmental or edgy, mm-hmm. or whatever.
I think for me it's more the scattered.
Uh-huh.
When you said that, I realized, you know, a lot of times I'll be just putting a lot of energy out and not necessarily taking the time to get stuff back in. So as a mother and a teacher and a singer, these are all things that in some ways I'm putting myself out there.
Right.
And I love that. And I feel like I do get a lot back from that, but maybe there are some times when I might be putting so much of myself out. And if it's a busy time, like during the summer, for example, mm-hmm. very busy and around grassroots. And we did this culture camp. And we also had, you might know, we had a death in our family. And so there was, that was a scattered time after, mm-hmm. after having, there was a lot of joy and a lot of great stuff that came from those few weeks, but by the end of it, I felt very scattered and discombobulated and needed some time to kind of like come back to focus, mm-hmm. and
pull the pieces back in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what do you do to pull the pieces back in? What do you, you know?
Yeah. I just went out to my garden.
Uh-huh.
And maybe
did you
took,
sit or did you do
oh,
something?
Oh, no, I can't sit. Actually, okay, I can't sit in my garden.
Yeah.
I like to just be, I find so much joy and peace in having something to do and working, mm-hmm. in the garden, mm-hmm. and knowing that I'm growing food for my family and for friends and community. It just feels like the right thing to do in the world to plant a seed and to help it grow and then to harvest it. And I haven't touched on this yet, but I have this big garden, but there's only a few months of the growing season,
sure,
around here.
Yeah.
So I've learned how to make that food last throughout the year, really. Mm-hmm. So I've done just tons of canning and freezing and drying and everything I can do to make that work and that effort and that summertime last. Right.
And do you have a cellar? Like
I don't, but I want one. But I have a huge chest freezer and a huge cabinet full of canned goods, mm-hmm. and we're in negotiations at my house about getting a little cellar. Dog.
And the funny thing is they have these units that you can put in as fully made units.
Uh-huh.
And so
good
they're
to
really
know.
Easy to clean and keep from building up bacteria and stuff, uh-huh. that might not be good for the stuff that you're storing there.
Right.
Anyway, so no, I grew up with a root cellar, and
uh-huh.
we put 1,000 pounds of potatoes in it every fall, and we would have enough to plant the potatoes in the spring. We would make sure that was what we did. And, you know, 50, 60 gallons of tomatoes and all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
That's the best. I love that.
So you also, it is really basic to get your hands on and do some work. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, what do you do for your, I see the emotional and the physical, but I was wondering what you do to kind of intellectually renew yourself, or is that just part of what you're doing while you're working or while
what
you're,
do you mean by intellectually?
How do you find new things to think about, or how do you look at old things in new ways? What do you do, which is the analytic piece, you know, mm-hmm. What do you do to cultivate that?
Yeah.
And you don't have to. I mean, not everybody.
Yeah. And I don't do that as much as I have at certain parts of my life, but, you know, conversations with friends,
sure.
and community, conversations with my child, it's always things like that.
So it's through dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and community.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And the kind of thing where the culture camp, you know, that would be a thing where you'd be in with other people and sorting stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amy, it has been wonderful to get to know you.
Thank you, Eric.
And we're going to have a live performance of a song that's not yet recorded.
Yeah.
Do you want to describe that?
Yeah, this song is called Until Morning. And I wrote this after being very inspired by a few concerts I had gone to this past winter in town. And I was with my son, and we, at about midnight, got home from this late night show. And my husband, Ward, carried my boy upstairs out of the car. He was sleeping, and he carried him upstairs, and he tucked him into bed, and I kissed him on the forehead. And it was, and I realized afterwards that right there is the best feeling when you're a child and you finally get back in bed and your parents tuck you in and you're just safe and warm. And so I went downstairs and I was up till about 3 a.m. writing this song. And it's pretty much about, yep, while he slept. Yeah. And it's about all those good things in life, that just those simple things that make you feel so good.
Okay, here we go.
Got my hands down in the dirt, and I did my share of work. Felt the sunshine on my back. Dipped my toes into the water, clean and cold, just like it ought to feel. A winding country stream. Found some time to sing a song. I kept singing all day long, with the birds up in the trees. Picked a fruit off of a vine, sweet and juicy and red like wine, and I knew the day was mine. It's that feeling when you got home late at night, when your daddy would carry you stairs in the dim and faded light. Your mama tuck you in and kiss your forehead, and there ain't no place that could be as good as this until morning. Up above it's sky blue pink, the sun is setting as it sinks behind the pretty little hills. All the same the moon will rise, lightning bugs will fill the skies as we sit around together. Warm night air will soothe the soul, bring back youth to what is old, blowing gently on your skin. Another day, another night, another laugh, another fight, another wrong, another right. That feeling when you got home late at night, when your daddy would carry you up the stairs in the dim and faded light. Your mama tuck you in and kiss your forehead, and there ain't no place that could be as good as this until morning. No, there ain't no place that could be as good as this.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and that concludes the Made of Clay Report.